From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Google has it going on. Already the world's hottest tech company and top search engine, Google keeps innovating. Its latest whiz-bang rollouts, 3D mapping with Google Earth, instant messaging and talk over the internet with Google Talk, and a new desktop application that lets you scan your hard drive with a few clicks of the mouse. Google is buying up hot new technologies, and it's been shopping, insiders say, for fiber optic cable that might let Google build its own internet. Now, with $3 billion in the bank, it's going back to Wall Street to raise another $4. With its money, talent, and clout, some see a new Microsoft in the making. Some wonder if Google can stick to its motto, do no evil. This hour on Point, the exploding ambition of Google and where the search engine giant is headed next. We begin this hour in San Mateo, California. Ben Elgin has been following Google's phenomenal success for Business Week magazine and joins me now. Ben, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, sure thing, Tom.
Ben, you say everybody out there in Silicon Valley, all the way to Bangalore, all through the high-tech world, is looking at Google and saying, what the heck is this company up to? First of all, what raises the question?
It's become probably the tech industry's most popular parlor game right now. These guys have... When you look at the types of people that they're hiring, the types of investments that they're making, and the types of acquisitions they're doing often on the sly, it's really far afield from what you and I typically use Google for today, which is just searching the internet. I mean, they're getting into toying with businesses ranging from internet access to mobile devices to a broader range of software for the desktop.
Well, take us back, just a year ago this month was the IPO, the huge public offering. It was a smash then. Where's the stock gone since?
Oh, it's been an enormous success. I mean, it's up more than three times its IPO price. The company nearly valued it at $80 billion. I mean, it's by far the most highly valued internet stock out there, easily trumping eBay and Yahoo. So it's been beyond what anyone anticipated.
Take us into some of these latest innovations, the new things that Google is rolling out, and why they're getting so much attention.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, like the Google Earth, for instance, being able to scan the globe with this satellite imaging, it's a very cool piece of software, and it's something that I think when you combine that with online maps, which is a very valuable online tool, you've got a very innovative product. I mean, people they don't want these drawn maps where you get these driving directions. I mean, it's much better to scan them, see the actual benchmarks out there, the actual road marks, if you will. So
that is photographs from satellites in space of the Earth. Many listeners will know this. Others will not have used it yet. I mean, you actually zoom in almost 3D style to a mapped photo.
Exactly. Yeah. And here's a online application, online maps that have been around for years and years. And Google comes in and essentially turns this market on its ear by offering essentially a big step forward and making this much more usable for a lot more people. So I think things like that just grab people's attention. On the other hand, you've got this new IM product, instant messaging product, mm-hmm. which allows you to message people via text over the internet or even use voice. But they come out with this, and it's really not much new here. I mean, it's really similar to a lot that's out there. But the amount of attention they get, I mean, it just turns everybody's head. Google's now into instant messaging.
So it's a straight-up muscle play. They're moving in on a new arena that's almost internet telephony here. There's talk of them. You write about them going after Verizon, Motorola. What's up there?
Yeah, well, what was grabbing my attention there was, I mean, I know executives there have long kind of ruminated privately about, gosh, it would be great to have a Google phone at some point. Wouldn't it be great to be able to access, people could access this information wherever they go and have these locally aware devices that know where you are.
So be your cell phone, but also pull up all the info that Google can access.
Yeah, exactly. But they made a very stealthy acquisition last month it was, of a company called Android, a handful of people here in Palo Alto. They didn't tell anybody about it. But these guys, I've been working on mobile phone software, and I think it's just they're dipping a toe in the water. They're seeing what they can do to essentially push that technology forward, perhaps have offer a much smarter mobile device of sorts.
And what's driving this new comparison out there between Google and Microsoft? Microsoft, of course, great accomplishments, great value created, but also has taken brickbats over the years. People called it the Borg. It sort of took over everything. Now Google is getting this kind of comparison. Is it because it's become so rich and powerful and aggressive in moving into new areas? Or is it because somehow Google's going to find itself at the heart of the computing universe? What's going on?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, and it's a good question. I think for sure everybody, particularly when I go out and talk to startups, I mean, people are on their toes. They want to know, gosh, what is Google going to do in this space? Could they get into this space? How do I react if they do get into this space? And I mean, that was the question that everybody posed for Microsoft 5 years ago. They could freeze a market by just uttering that they had some interest in it. And it would send investors kind of pondering, gosh, what should we do here? And competitors might change their tact, et cetera. And now Google essentially has that power. And I think what you saw with this IM launch, this instant messaging launch, which didn't have a huge breakthrough technologically. I mean, it was merely, as you say, a power play. They're just all of a sudden here, we're going to be reckoned with, and we don't necessarily have to push this ball forward technologically. So when I think they did this, I think it's kind of raised a lot of eyebrows and said, gosh, you know, it's a different form of Google launch of a Google product here. And perhaps we're seeing them come of age a little bit and try to throw their muscle around like Microsoft used to.
Is there a strategy by which Google becomes the heart of the digital universe, supplants Microsoft? Has it already?
They are very tight-lipped about this, but when you look at the people they're hiring, for instance, they are hiring a lot of people who have significant experience building operating systems. They have some folks who worked at Microsoft, you know, 5 years ago, who were key in Microsoft's .NET strategy, which was Microsoft's efforts to essentially push their dominance in operating systems onto the internet, into the internet realm. So if you just look at the people they're hiring, they, for instance, have hired a bunch of people who were working on the Mozilla browser, which is the key competitor to Microsoft's
mm-hmm.
browser.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're hiring these people who are just at, who offer skills at the core of Microsoft's stronghold. So I think it's fair to speculate about, what are these guys working on in the back rooms there? And I think it's probably safe to say they're at least tinkering with this. And gosh, can we develop an operating system for the internet that weaves together all of these products and services at a much more powerful level than what we have today? I think it's fair to say they are working on something like that.
Well, there is a grand ambition indeed. When you ask what the heck is Google up to, it sounds like quite a lot. Ben Elgin with Business Week, thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Ben Elgin writes for Business Week magazine. He spoke with me from San Mateo, California. We are talking this hour about Google and its super ambition to organize all the world's information, including yours. You can join the conversation. Is a corporate miracle coming at us here? Or is this Big Brother with a monster database? What do you make of Google? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Danny Weitzner, Director of Public Policy at the World Wide Web Consortium, an international group that develops standards and guidelines for the web. He's also Principal Research Scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. Danny Weitzner, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
So help us understand this ambition and its implications. Google's stated mission, organizing the world's information and making it universally accessible and useful. Talk about a vast, modest-sounding, but utterly vast ambition. What does that mean this company has to do?
Well, you know, I think I was struck by something that your last guest, Ben, said, that the question is, you know, is Google trying to develop the operating system for the internet the way that Microsoft developed a dominant operating system for personal computer platforms?
Yeah.
And what struck me about that, of course, is that we already have an operating system for the internet and the web. And Google, it really is a set of openly developed public standards that come from organizations such as mine and others like the Internet Engineering Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, of course, what makes the internet work today and what makes the web work today. And Google has been an extraordinary beneficiary of that. So far, they have it appears that they are figuring out how to grow and innovate and develop in a way that respects the openness of those standards. And in some ways, probably the real question is, are they ever going to feel that they want to deviate from those and kind of go off and do their own thing? I think the evidence to date, though, is that they benefit most by having the most open and most participatory web, because then there's more for them to organize, more for them to help people navigate through, and frankly, more to sell advertising against.
But here we see Google even out buying up so-called dark fiber optic cable, unused fiber optic cable, and speculation that they might try and build their own backbone, their own internet.
Yeah, I have to say I am at a loss to explain that or understand that. You know, the part of the reason they can buy up dark fiber is that it's virtually worthless at this point.
Mm-hmm. So
we've all seen what's happened to the venerable old long distance telephone companies and other communications companies. They've been commodified out of business, so that connectivity, the basic access to internet services, is becoming something that you almost give away. And maybe that's what Google wants to be able to do. The question, again, to ask is, will that have some kind of harmful effect on the openness of the web and the ability for people to use the web? Or is it something that just gives Google more to sell against?
Makes it better and better. Danny Weitzer, stand by. We want to dig into all that this hour. We're delighted that you're with us. We are talking about the exploding ambitions of Google and where the top search engine is headed next. You can join us. Is this the world's greatest convenience coming at us, or Big Brother with a monster database? Have you Googled yourself lately? Really Googled yourself? Have you seen what's in there? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the exploding ambitions of Google and where the top search engine is headed next, that huge mission to organize all the world's information, including yours, online and now on your desktop computer. You can join us this hour. Do you care about privacy if Google can get you what you want? And what about Google's first do no evil motto? Can you be the colossus and be that clean? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined this hour by Danny Weitzner. He's with us from New York, principal research scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, director of public policy issues at the World Wide Web Consortium. Right now, Michael is calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
We're great. What do you think?
Well, I feel that Google is just simply increasing access to the internet. Really answering the mail of 80% of the people who perform a basic search but still can't make any sense of what the results are.
So for you, it's all good?
Absolutely. I know my mother has this complaint, and and she says, I prefer to just use the email, so that's where she ends up.
But Google organizes the web for you, lets you find what you want. Do you have any of the Big Brother fear, Michael, or are you confident? Do you trust that Google's fundamentally working in your interest?
Well, cautious trust. I have some computer background, so I feel confident and comfortable in using Google in that way. But I can still see where, again, from my mother's perspective, that she is suspicious, but at the same time, she's frustrated. So I think once we get over the frustration, maybe you can get more people involved, and then, of course, more products will ensue, I imagine.
Suspicious, frustrated, and technology-empowered, welcome to the modern life. Michael, thanks very much for your call. Danny Weitzner, here's the basic issue. They're pulling all the information in the world together and very aggressively moving into pulling whole books in from whole libraries, getting very deep into personal information as well. Trust would seem to be at the heart of Google's existence. It started out with a great reputation there. Can it keep it as it gets so big?
Well, I think that you're absolutely right. The caller was kind of, you know, Google's probably best story customer, someone who, as you said, sees all good. I think what's really interesting at the core of Google is that they do have obviously they rely on people trusting them. And you know, you got to remember, Google was started by two computer science graduate students, and they did what computer scientists do. They developed a mechanism, an impartial mechanism, really, for trying to help people organize.
This is Larry Page and Sergey Brin.
That's right. Exactly. And it's worth spending just a moment to understand how the core of Google actually works.
Yes,
it works based on what is known as the PageRank algorithm. It's a very, really simple mechanism that the Google founders developed, which helps them figure out how to prioritize search results, how to rank them, so that when you search for something like, Washington and Metro, you know, there are any number of probably hundreds of thousands of pages that you could get back from that. The question then is, how is Google going to figure out which pages to present to you first? Because that's, after all, what people like about Google. And studies find that something like 80% of people only look at the first page of the search results. And the question, I think, to really understand about Google is, how does that page rank algorithm work? It works, in some sense, based on a voting system. Google decides how to order those search results, how to rank those pages, by looking at how other pages link to the pages that you find. The idea being that a page gets a higher page rank if more other pages link to it.
Well, let me ask you, if I may then, Danny, because Google is now the top search engine, but it's still just got something over a third of all search activity on the web. Microsoft is in there too. Yahoo's in there too. Is Google better as a search experience, or is that just a personal subjective judgment?
Well, I think better is a very subjective question. Google is good and maybe even the best at finding the most popular pages on a given subject, because they're finding the pages that are linked to the most. And this is great both for users who just want a kind of a quick hit view of relevant things on the web, and it also happens to be great for advertisers who want to be able to present messages through Google based on search results which people consider reliable and accurate. So I think that all the talk about different kinds of acquisitions that Google is doing, different services that they're getting into is important to look at. I think you have to really view it all through the lens of this idea of page ranking the web, because that's what drives Google's business model. That's where their ad revenue comes from.
Of course, they can page rank themselves right into the heart of your personal life. We kind of mischievously started this hour off with the results of a 30-minute Google search, a few of them, on Google CEO Eric Schmidt. CNET did this. A reporter there named Eleanor Mills spent 30 minutes, and within that time, she had an awful lot of very personal information about this guy, about his wife, his address, about the $10,000 a plate political fundraiser he attended 5 years ago, where Elton John played Benny and the Jets and Al Gore and Tipper danced. Google responded, as anybody might when that kind of personal stuff is put out in the public domain, not so happily. In fact, they cut CNET off for 1 year, they were told, from being spoken to by Google. But the rest of us don't have that choice, and it's all public information. Anybody who goes on there can get it through Google. So are they not willing to take their own medicine there, CEO Schmidt?
Well, you know, I as a reporter, I'm sure you can well appreciate that this kind of tactic is probably most likely to backfire, as it seems to have so
yes,
far.
Yes.
And I suppose the real question is, you may have some CEO who all of a sudden gets a little bit nervous about people looking into his private life. Where I would become really concerned, as opposed to just feeling sorry for them for being kind of self-defeating, where I would become really concerned is if they all of a sudden said, well, we're going to do our search results based on this PageRank algorithm, except we're going to subtract everything that's at CNET.com. That's where you would start to worry. Mm-hmm. And so far, there's no evidence that Google has done anything like that. So, you know, I think what's going on is a kind of a public relations game, perhaps played poorly. But I'm not sure how much it really says about the core business model or operations model of Google. It certainly reveals just how revealing they've made the world.
And we'll continue to make it more revealing to the point where you wonder, where are we headed here? And, of course, back to that trust issue. As long as you trust Google, it's great. But as you suggest, if the information gets manipulated, it's our sense of the planet that gets manipulated. A lot of power sitting right there. Let's take another call. Carol is calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
We're great. Great to hear from you. What do you think, Carol?
Well, I think I'm a little more philosophical about it. I differ from your previous caller. I think he should listen to his mom. I really think this. I really think that there absolute power, you know, corrupts absolute. I believe that, and I believe that when you start mixing money and information, and you allow companies, well, allow, but when you see companies acquiring so much of both, so much information,
mm-hmm.
and so much access to it, so much money, I think that it's just human nature. We ought to be a little suspicious of it. Now, there are members of the public that just because they're big and they're popular, some people will embrace them, but there are other people who are automatically skeptical. When it was just a search engine,
yeah,
it was cool. But now, what are you doing now?
But, Carol, let me ask you, aren't you drawn to this power to go to Google and get all this information? Doesn't it empower your life?
Always when I search, I'm almost always going to use Google and somebody else deliberately. Because Google does have the information, yes, and so you have to respect their, you know, you have to respect their acquisition of information and the way they organize it. They're smart, they're good at it, but I don't want them dictating, because that's what I feel happens sometimes when you have access. Sometimes you begin not so much to offer the information, but you actually start to guide people in their searches down certain paths.
Yeah, it can certainly go that way, and we hear your wariness of the great beast here, and thank you for your call. Denny Whitestone, this is supposed to be the White Knight, though, and they have made an awful lot of amazing things possible. They've got the do no evil philosophy right there in their initial public offering, and it still sticks around. Where do you see Google's ultimate goal? What's the vision here that drives them? Maybe it helps us understand their motivations and how they're likely to pursue it.
Well, you know, they'll have to speak to their own vision. I think right now, if you look at Google as a business, which it is, it's a publicly traded company,
mm-hmm.
fundamentally, their goal, whatever they say, has to be to bring in revenue. And again, their engine of revenue is the advertising mechanism they have based on the PageRank algorithm. I think that what Google has done, though, as you and others noted, is they have worked very hard to continue to innovate and probably most importantly, to continue to find ways to provide those innovations in an easy, accessible manner to users. And what does that do? It continues to draw us there. All of a sudden, one day, you know, you're searching on Google and you're looking for an address, and then you're offered the Google Maps service.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that especially in the technology user community, which I think is led in some ways by sort of a technological elite that loves new gizmos. Google is just the master of new gizmos here, and they're good gizmos, and they're exciting, and they're useful, and I think most importantly, they're delivered to users with really a minimum of burden. You don't have to mm-hmm. install new software. You don't have to figure them out too hard. They're intuitive, and I think that as long as Google continues to do this, they're going on the positive side, they're going to retain people's admiration. And as long as they make sure not to step into the trap of either abusing people's personal information or, as the previous caller said, manipulating search results for some gain, as long as they continue to keep that balance, I think you have to believe they're going to be on a very strong road.
Light but amazing gizmos, just like that famously clean homepage. But what seems to be an ultimate goal, to kind of empower us with information that would almost seem supernatural a half generation ago, wherever we are at all times. And, of course, the flip side of that, to get their advertisers in touch with our desires while we're so empowered. Let's take a call. Jerry's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hi there. You were speculating earlier as to what the possible uses might be for Google's acquisition of dark fiber.
Yes, this unused fiber optic lines that they've bought up all over the place.
Right, exactly. I could very easily imagine that what they're doing is, as I understand the way Google works, they have a number of distributed clusters of servers that do the database processing and the web spidering that goes out and finds links
yep.
finds all the information that they base their service on. That whole system is very decentralized, and I can imagine them wanting to link all of those servers via a separate secure network apart from the public internet.
So is that an alternate internet or just a supplement to what we already use?
Well, in particular, an internet that connects just their servers that's not available to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So they can then transfer very large volumes of data at very, very high speeds between their servers, and they can then transfer more information than they can over the public internet, which to some extent they don't control because of the fact that it's controlled by lots of different internet providers.
And maybe they can transfer that information more cheaply at the same time. That's power to have your own pathways. Jerry, thanks for calling. To speak to that, I want to turn to Washington and Rob Peguerrero. He's personal technology columnist for The Washington Post. Rob, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hello, glad to be here.
So here we've got great big sprawling Google and getting bigger and sprawling all the time, even to the point we're reading here of buying up its own dark fiber, unused fiber optic cable, speculation that they might start supplying Wi-Fi, a wireless internet service to cities all over the country. They're already looking at doing it in San Francisco. Does that sound like a Google-sized ambition, Rob?
It's kind of weird. They have all these, there are almost two mysteries to Google. One of them is simply, what are they going to do next? And the other is, how do they propose to make money off of it? Because they do these crazy projects, which at first seem to be of no relevance. For instance, why would you want to launch an instant messaging service that doesn't actually ride on the service everyone else already uses, AOLs?
And the answer is?
Who knows? It's almost like in the sci-fi movie when the aliens come out of the UFO and they're offering some gadget to humanity. they have a book that says, to serve man. But is it a cookbook?
Right.
No one knows.
Oh boy, you got us scared. But you must have be able to speculate here. I mean, it gets them into the flow of how people correspond to each other. They want to be in that flow, don't they?
That's my guess. I mean, essentially, they want to be. I mean, actually, the computer screen I'm looking at right now is a good demonstration of it. On the right hand of it, I have the Google desktop sidebar.
This is the brand new product out a week ago or so.
Yeah, a week or so. To its left, I've got a Google Earth window open where I'm looking at a picture of my house. I can tell it predates when we moved in because I believe it's the prior owner's car I see on the street out
there. Oh, my gosh. Is there anything, is there garbage in the back seat?
It looks like the lawn needs to be watered.
Right.
It was kind of dry in D.C. last summer.
So you're the Google-empowered man.
Exactly. And they want to be the source you turn to when you want to find something, when you want to communicate with somebody. And they seem to, so far, be doing well with a business model where they don't need to sell massive, annoying ads that pop up and blink and flash.
Mm-hmm.
They just sell little strips of text that run next to other things, other properties they have. They use this ad service. They offer that to other sites as well. So the Post buys ads through that.
Rob, let me ask you, you look at all kinds of personal technology. There's this talk of Google becoming the new Microsoft, whatever that means in terms of its 800-pound gorilla-ness or its...
lots of viruses and bugs.
Right, or its centrality in the technology world. How do you see them generally? Do you still feel this more positive impulse pulsing through Google? Do you see them as having the kind of higher purpose, in fact, that was part of their reputation when they first went to the public market?
Yes, so far, I'm not willing to place absolute trust in any technology company or any company, period, out to make a buck. You always have to look at what they're trying to do and what the bargain they offer you is. But the services, the products, the software they offer, they work. They're clean, they're efficient, they think of things that other companies haven't done. They're a source of innovation, which is really hard to find in the technology business when you look at what a lot of other companies are doing and how they define innovation. I think, we do need a company like Google. At some point, maybe you want another couple companies like Google so they have some competition. I'd hate to see... Take the example of mapping sites. Until Google came along with Google Maps, that whole category had been moribund because everyone went to AOL's MapQuest, where they'd actually taken away features over the years.
Right.
Now, suddenly everyone's interested in doing lots of cool mapping sites. You never want to see complacency set in because then, mediocrity sets in soon after.
Well, so far, it looks nothing like complacency at Google, and now they're out for another $4 billion in a secondary offering. We'll look at their valuation, what this company can really be worth, and what it can really do globally. And for you, Rob Peguerrero, Danny Whitestern, please stand by. You can join us. Could this be the new Microsoft? Vast, rich, and more than a little scary? Or is Google your white knight, a beautiful innovator making the world work for you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the exploding ambitions of Google and where the top search engine is headed next. It wants to organize all the world's information, including yours. You can join us. What do you think? Have you tried Google Talk, Google Earth? Are you ready for Google cell phones? And it's all great, but is it really worth $77 billion? Google's market cap. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined from New York by Danny Weitzner, Director of Public Policy at the World Wide Web Consortium. Rob Peguerrero from The Washington Post is with us. And right now joining us from New York is Benjamin Schachter. He's an Internet Analyst for UBS Securities. Benjamin Schachter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, I have to say right up front, because we're not so sure about the Chinese wall in your world anymore, that you guys have done business with Google in the last 12 months. Of course, I suppose a lot of investment banks have or hope to. But what do you think of the valuation of this company? Here it's out to raise another $4 billion. It's already got something like a $77 billion market cap, that is sort of market value. Is that justified?
Well, you know, we still think it is. At these levels, it's actually not trading at significantly high historical multiples.
79 times or 80 times trailing earnings, isn't that a lot?
Looking at trailing earnings is not really the way I think most people tend to look at these stocks, particularly stocks that are growing as fast as Google and some of the other Internet stocks.
Okay.
It's much more appropriate, I think, to look at what the future growth rates are and how fast it can grow then. And if you're looking at a stock that, you know, we think in 2006, 2007 can continue to grow earnings over 30%, then at levels today, it's not particularly expensive.
But we're seeing others on Wall Street saying it may be overvalued by 150%, that to keep up with the kind of value put on it, it'd have to grow in the next 10 years by 1,400%. That's pretty enormous. Can it really do that?
Well, I'm not sure where those numbers come from. I can tell you that looking at our numbers and where we derive our price target, which is $350, technically people generally look at multiples on the following year's earnings. And if we look at where we think the stock will trade a year from now, people are going to be looking at 2007 revenue and earnings growth. And in 2007, I think it's relatively conservative to say that this stock can earn $9 to $10. And $9 to $10 at 30 to 35 times, you can get to $300, $350. Pretty easily, actually.
Google is very rich and about to get a whole lot richer with this secondary offering. People are comparing it to Microsoft at the height of its powers. In the investment banking business, even on the analysis side, if you didn't think that was true, would you have the backbone to say it, Benjamin? Or is that now, are they just too scared? You need and want their business.
No, well, it has nothing to do with wanting their business at all. That has zero.
Well, it certainly did in the 90s, and that's not long ago.
Well, you know, I wasn't on Wall Street then, and I can tell you what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
The story today is that it has zero impact on anything I'm thinking. And in fact, when I launched coverage on this company in November of 2004, I actually was wrong and told people to sell the stock. I quickly changed my view as the earnings power of the company came into focus, and in May of this year, I raised my rating to a buy rating.
Well, so it's been quite a rocket ride, up more than 230% since it came out at $85 last August, and there's still a big thumbs up from Benjamin Schachter at UBS. Benjamin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's hear from our callers. John is calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. How's it going?
It's good. What do you think of Google?
Actually, I think very highly of Google, at least from what I've been talking with my friends. One of my friends is actually a computer science major at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh.
Great.
Which is, it's a very great university for him to go into. But the point is that he says that Google has a unique approach to development where it really limits its overhead. And I think as a result, Google continues to be able to supply a number of different services that no other search engine can supply to the average consumer. And when it comes to the worries about information, well, information is really a privilege. A lot of people take information as being something that we're all guaranteed to. But the truth is that if you ask me a question, I have the right to withhold or to tell you that information.
Well, you have had, but now if you don't answer me, maybe Google will, even if it's about you, even if it's about your personal life, John.
Oh, that's true, but there are already so many websites out there which can give you too much information about me just from simple Social Security number. Websites like Spy for You or DickDirt.com, which can give you loads of information, very personal information. Many people don't know that this is possible, but it's quite possible to any consumer who's willing to go on the net and look for these things.
Sounds like you have more faith in Google than the alternates.
I do, and it's just because of the way that they run their business and the fact that I think that there are so many companies out there right now who are doing it wrong that that Google seems like a promising one that could do it right. And plus, we have to look at the ramifications when it comes to law enforcement or when it comes to basically helping our civil servants in terms of serving us. Google already offers things that offer services like Google Earth, which allow you to see satellite photos dynamically.
Yeah, we got it. Law enforcement and civil servants helping us and super empowered with information. And yes, it's exciting, but then back comes that Big Brother shadow potential again. John, thanks for calling. Danny Weitzner, how about on the business front for a moment here? Benjamin Schachter is still very high on Google despite its big high market cap. Our caller is saying, you know, their reputation is that they limit their overhead, but they're raising an awful lot more money here. Does it look like it's well balanced financially to you?
Well, I've got to leave the business analysis to the experts in that field. But I guess what I would say, just listening to your conversation with Benjamin about the reliance on future earning potential, you know, if the world stays the same, it certainly seems reasonable to imagine that Google will continue to grow. Bottom line, what we know is that more and more advertising budgets are shifting from the offline world to the online world. And Google, that's a huge shift, and Google's going to be able to take advantage of that. But the world doesn't stay the same. Google, as we discussed, has one particular approach to searching the web. It's been very successful. They keep adding services. They're going to enhance that model. But the question is, are they going to get trapped in their model?
Is there an alternative model that people have spotted that might
I think you can look, for example, at services, photo services like Flickr, services that provide people ability to tag their content, the blog world. Google's trying to get into this world. These are services really where rather than just passively putting content out on the web, people put content out with search hints on them already. So that doing some part or trying to do some part of what Google does as its core service. I think these services have tremendous potential. They've built larger and larger communities around them. And that could really change the landscape of search quite substantially. Google, I think, could quite possibly keep up with that and come along with that trend and start to learn how to use these tags and ontologies and folksonomies. But maybe they'll be a little too stuck in their current model. And this is, of course, always the challenge in the technology world. Do you stick with what's good and what currently makes you money, or do you keep really trying to innovate and replace new business models with old business models? So, I think that's their challenge.
The world will change. Maybe they'll be the ones doing the changing. They've got a lot going on right now. Esther's calling from Boston. Hi, Esther. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I just wanted to respond to the comment a long time ago about Google having cool gizmos. I search Google probably hourly, and I have Gmail, and recently I used Google Earth to find the apartment that my family is moving to in Australia.
Oh,
we weren't sure what it looked like, and
that's
so we were
great.
Able to use that.
How did it look? Are you encouraged by your...
Yeah, it looks really cool. It was, we were able to see that we were, yes, indeed, 3 blocks from Bondi Beach, and, you know, where was the local mall, and it was just so helpful in a way that really nothing else was.
So it sounds like all upside to you. What do you do once an hour Googling? You're a very curious person.
Everything from how to cure a diaper rash to how to get a cat cage, just everything. I you know, anything that I need, I just type in exactly my question and something comes back.
Wow, that's tremendous. And now even a picture of the apartment you're headed for in Australia. Esther, thank you for calling. Rob Peguero, that's the voice of the consumer that's kept coming up in this hour saying, I love the stuff they do for me.
Exactly. What you mentioned, I've definitely seen there are some people who will use search engines as their bookmarks list. They don't remember addresses or anything. Simply type out what exactly they're looking for, and they don't need to remember if they saw this interesting stereo they want to buy on this store or that store or what part of Amazon it was on. They'll just type blah, 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 hit the enter key, and bam, there it is.
A kind of extension, omniscient extension of ourselves.
Yeah, it's sort of like Google becomes your second brain, I suppose you could say. Kind of scary when you think about it that way.
And that is both the strength and the weakness, really, of mm-hmm. Google. Is it does provide this very powerful interface to the content out there on the web, but it is only one interface, and it doesn't in any way preclude the development of other kinds of interfaces. I mentioned the photo sharing service Flickr, which has millions of users all around the world, people who share their photos and put these little tags on them to help each other find them and are able to comment on each other's
right.
photos.
Of course, Google has its own version of that, right? Picasa that they picked up recently?
It doesn't have exactly the same features, but it's quite similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo, I think, actually recently bought Flickr. But it's an example of the fact that there's a whole different way of organizing information on the web and searching for information on the web that, again, maybe Google will catch up with, maybe not. I think that Google came along. It was as we all know, it was not the first search engine.
Right.
And it seems unlikely that it's going to be the last.
Mm. Rob, what about this transparency of information? It's wonderful. We can hear in the voices of our callers how exciting it is to use it. But it eventually includes ourselves, even Google's CEO, Eric Schmidt, kind of naked out there. Is the trade-off worth it? We get to look into anything we please, including, that means, others looking into our own very private lives.
It's an excellent question. I am not ultimately sure. This will sound defeatist, but I don't know if there's anything that can be done about it. It's simply a question of, you know, Google doesn't create any of this data. It simply finds it. So in a certain sense, you could say this simply levels the field between us and the private detectives. You know, now we can all, you know, very easily see, you know, how much we paid for each other's houses and, you know, what silly things we said in some newsgroup forum 10 years ago. Please don't go looking for my old newsgroup posts, by the way.
And yet they don't go away.
You know, yeah.
The old Chinese saying, behave in the privacy of your home as if you were in public. That is, you know, never do anything you wouldn't do in public. Well, increasingly, an awful lot of what we do may be public via services like Google.
And you've got to see how far Google has really been responsible for moving, I think, our general perceptions about what's acceptable from a privacy standpoint or not. Google, as we know, does an enormous amount of targeting of ads based on very, very detailed histories of your searching.
Right.
If anyone proposed to do that 10 years ago, they would have been, just laughed out of the box. But Google does it. They get away with it, and I think they're changing the way we think about our privacy boundaries.
The goalposts move, and we move right along with them, it seems. Denny Weitzner at MIT and the World Wide Web Consortium, wonderful to have you with us this hour. Thanks so much, Tom. And Rob Peguero, personal technology columnist for The Washington Post. Terrific to have you, Rob. Thanks for joining us. Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, Google poetry. This is On Point. There is one incarnation of Google that we haven't touched on yet this hour, Google as poetry. As Danish poet and radio producer Pike Malinowski tells us, the search engine has spawned a new genre of contemporary literature, Google poetry.
when I make a Google poem, I type in a line in quotation marks, and then I copy-paste all the hits I get out of that. So I don't write anything. Basically, the poem writes itself. I dreamt that we were in my backyard and he fell into a swimming pool. I dove in to save him, but he had disappeared. I dreamt that we were in the Franklin office and she told me I needed to draft an article someone else had written. I dreamt that we were in Iceland and that the clouds were completely different from any I had ever seen, strange and colorful. A few days later, I dreamt that we were in the great synagogue of Yutz. I dreamt that we were in bed together, no fuss or feathers, no great action or plot, just the warmly delicious fact. I dreamt that we were in the hospital's hallway, and she was standing up, not hooked to any machines. Sunday night, September 9th. I dreamt that we were in a building that had a strange, large window without glass, which an aircraft flew into. I'm totally amazed by Google. You know, Google is such an eye into the world right now and what people think. The Google poems, I see it as sort of going out and interviewing a handful of people or asking a handful of people the same question. That's basically what I do from my desk, typing in, when I die, I want. And the answers I get are totally random, normal people's idea of this subject. When I die, I want you to take all my money and place it in a casket with me. When I die, I want to be reincarnated as one of my rats. When I die, I want to die like Grandpa. When I die, I want to start a new funeral tradition. I want my body to be stuffed with explosives. When I die, I want to be reborn as the bond market so I can have real power. When I die, I want my ashes to be put into an Etch-a-Sketch so that my grandkids can play with me whenever they want. When I die, I want to be cremated and left on the doorstep of a random stranger. It's either that or I want to be stuffed and placed on the sofa. When I die, I want to be buried under a big old tree without a casket, so that my body can feed the tree. When I die, I want a moment of noise.
Pike Malinowski is a Google poet and independent radio producer in New York. He creates his poems by plugging an opening phrase into Google. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.